You're listening to Sonologue's podcast, NRI, New and Returned Indians. In each episode, we meet someone who's recently moved to India and get their perspectives on living, working, and just being here. The good, the bad, and the fun. In this episode of NRI equals New and Returned Indians, we're talking to Sarah Hine, who has just started her own business in Hyderabad. Sarah's been in India for a year and originally came as a fellow of the American India Foundation in early 2007 and just stayed on. We met in a friend's flat here in Mumbai and talked about making a difference, being a single white female so far from home, Indian stretchable time, and the values of flexibility. Her spirit of adventure and openness to new experiences really came through in the interview, so take a listen.
My name is Sarah Hine, and I am in India right now as a co-founder of a company called PharmaSecure. And PharmaSecure aims to reduce the sale of counterfeit drugs in developing nations. So we are operating in India right now and also throughout Africa.
Where are you from?
I am from Connecticut in the US.
And what brought you to India? When did you come here?
I originally came over a year ago to do a fellowship with the American India Foundation. I was paired with an Indian NGO in Himachal Pradesh and also worked out of Delhi for about half of the time. And I transitioned into PharmaSecure after my fellowship ended.
What's your background academically and what were you doing in the States before you came here?
Well, I completed my undergrad in chemistry and worked in leadership development and marketing for a couple of years, and then went back to business school because I thought that I would want to have a company that does leadership development with executives. And so I pursued human resources and organizational behavior after business school and realized that I wanted to get involved more in development work. So that was what led me over to India.
How did you get interested in the AIF? Why India? Did you have any sort of ties with India?
Yes, I had been in India previously. Before business school, I thought this might be my last opportunity to go abroad and do some volunteer work, and I was in Nepal for 4.5 months, and during that time spent about a month in Kolkata working with missionaries of charity there, and I'd also come to Himachal Pradesh to trek for a couple weeks, and that was in some sense a turning point where I realized that I had been working for a financial services company in human resources and it was just not doing it for me anymore. I really felt like I wanted to meet people's more basic needs, and so I started looking at opportunities to come over to India for a short term with the idea of determining, one, if I wanted to be involved in development work, and two, could I see myself working in India for the long run? And initially the answer to both of those was no. But after about 5 months, the answer to both of those questions became yes. Yes, I want to remain involved in development work, and yes, I want to remain working in India.
You know, the first yes makes sense to me from any perspective. I can't understand why it's a yes for the long run. So will you tell us a little more about that?
When I'm thinking long run, I'm thinking of being professionally involved between the US and India for the long run. It may not mean that I'm living in India for the rest of my life. I can't predict that right now. But when I was trekking in Himachal Pradesh and had this life-changing experience realizing, wow, I need to reach people's more basic needs, I originally had a sense of wanting to give back to this community that had changed and impacted my life so much. So that was why I worked with an NGO that was based in Himachal Pradesh, because that was an area that had an impact upon me and just a beautiful place, a way to make an impact. I think in terms of what I am interested in, India is a great environment for seeing things happen, for being able to make a difference, as cliche as that sounds. The reason being that when someone has an idea, there's some way to make it happen. And it's probably a matter of knowing the right people, having the right connections, but ultimately, that change can occur. And I think it occurs more easily here than, for example, in the US.
Really? Now why? Why?
I think it's a combination. A lot of it, I think, goes back to the sense of community in India. For better or for worse, people work together. And when somebody has that kind of a great idea, then everybody seems to collaborate to make it happen.
You've actually seen this happen, because I'm sorry for my skepticism, mm-hmm. but I feel like the flip side of that with the whole community thing is also the nepotism, the corruption. Mm-hmm. Have you faced any of that?
Yeah, so that's why I say for better or for worse, people tend to stick together and work together. I have seen some of that, even just seeing my friend who is Indian in Delhi, and he was having some run-in with locals regarding where he was parking his car. And someone came out and said, "Do you know who I am? And how can you park here? And this is not a proper place for you." And so then my friend shared who his mother was, and she's a woman who's well-known in the community, and the guy instantly backed off. Now, it worked in our favor that day, but it's frustrating that sometimes these things happen merely upon the basis of who knows whom or whose son or daughter you are.
All right. And you're living in Hyderabad right now?
Right now I'm in Hyderabad, yes.
All right. So tell us a little bit about that. You did a fellowship with the EIF.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you doing in Himachal?
I was in Himachal Pradesh working with an NGO there called Muse. And because of my background in marketing and also in outdoor education, I did a couple different things with them. One was marketing their livelihoods endeavors. So tourists come to this area, it's Lahol and Spiti, it's absolutely beautiful. And when tourists come, the NGO Muse offers a homestay option for tourists. So I did training for the homestay providers, I assessed different options for travelers depending upon what sort of eco rating they were interested in for their homestay. I also got involved in some carbon crediting of tourists coming to the area and some public health as well. I wrote a paper for the government to provide funding for public toilets mm-hmm. and water management.
And what was the other NGO you were with?
The other was the Rural Technology and Development Center, and I began working with them in Himachal Pradesh. That was one of my most frustrating experiences in India. I was in a place where I had no work to do, there were no resources for me to do any work, and I was very isolated both geographically, linguistically, socially. So it was a very challenging time, and I ended up shifting.
Oh, so you requested a transfer?
I requested a transfer, and it was just a big mismatch from the very beginning. Yeah, and I lived in Palanpur, which is a beautiful place with tea plantations, just gorgeous. I enjoyed running every morning. However, there were no expats in the area and very few people that spoke English. Mm-hmm. So I had one dear friend who is an Indian woman doing PhD research in the area, and she and I became fast friends, and we would go exploring various places. And
I'm sure this sounds much better in retrospect rather than when you were living it.
It was misery when I lived it. But I lived through it, and I think it's testament to the fact that as humans, we actually are much more resilient than we usually give ourselves credit for.
Definitely. So then you finished your fellowship, mm-hmm. you finished working with Muse, and?
And I wanted to remain working in India. So I began pursuing different job opportunities. I applied to a number of different organizations throughout India and got a number of offers, and I did not pursue anything in the U.S., but I was not interested in working there. My mom said, "Sarah, have you even looked at anything in the U.S.?" I said, "No, but most of the things in India have fallen into my lap, so as long as I am interested in working here and I have the option to do so, it seems foolish to not try that."
But you're not working with anybody.
Well, I have my own company, and we have many Indian partners, and as soon as one of my business partners wraps up our first round of funding, he'll return to India.
All right, so tell us about the startup, and how did that happen?
Yeah, my two business partners, Nathan and Taylor, were students together in the U.S., and they had done work in India and Africa, and saw one of the larger health problems resulting from counterfeit drugs. Mm-hmm. So they were thinking, how can we address this problem? Well, let's use a very simple technology based on mobile phone capabilities that already exist in these developing areas and provide a way for the consumer to have the power in their own hands of verifying that the drugs they have are authentic versus counterfeit. So I met Nathan at a barbecue in Delhi. And this was after I had completed my fellowship. We began talking about his business, what he was doing, and he said, "Well, how would you be interested, or would you be interested in coming on board?" And so we continued the discussions for a couple of months, mm-hmm. and I returned after visiting my family in the States for a month and began working with PharmaSecure.
Very cool. So you're a partner in the firm?
I am. I'm co-founder with my two business partners.
So you obviously believe in this.
Yes. When this succeeds, it will have a huge impact on the health systems in these areas. And the technology we have can be applied across industries, but for us, the compelling reason is to see lives saved and enhanced, and so for that reason, we're focusing on the healthcare industry.
What are the statistics? How many people actually have fatalities because of spurious drugs?
Right. One simple example is artusinate, which is an anti-malarial medicine. And in Southeast Asia alone, about 200,000 people perish a year from artusinate that does not have the level of active ingredients. It's actually an artusinate counterfeit, since artusinate is the brand name. And so that's just one product.
And so it's just available in pharmacies and people just buy the wrong one and they don't know the difference?
Yes, because if you were to look at the two packages, you as an educated consumer would not be able to tell the difference. I cannot tell the difference just by looking at the packaging.
When do you think that'll start?
We have been talking with a couple companies about pilots, so I'm hoping to start a pilot by the end of this year, 2008.
So how's it been to live here as a single white woman?
Yeah, this being a single white woman in India has been a challenge. I was speaking with Rita, our friend, about this last week, and she said, "Do you notice when people stare at you?" And I said, "Quite honestly, now I don't notice so much anymore."
Which is really sad that you had to get immune to it.
I operate very differently in the U.S. when I'm there. But here, I just avert people's eyes, and I don't maintain eye contact. And I don't react unless someone says something or does something that is inappropriate. But the stares I needed to just get past, because I'm tall, I'm white, I'm female, I stick out in this place. And I've accepted that. There's no changing that, so.
What about your lifestyle? Do you get to run and stuff in Hyderabad? Do you find that hard?
It has been hard because Hyderabad is more traditional than Delhi. In Delhi, there was a park that I would go to regularly and run. I had a gym that I ran at and worked out at. There are gyms in Hyderabad. However, it's just a little bit more of a challenge for me in that area. Although Hyderabad has wonderful rocks, so I've been able to rock climb a number of times, which I did not do in Delhi. So it has this upside as well.
That's cool. Yeah. And have you made friends? Is there a huge expat community?
There is a huge expat community in Hyderabad. People mainly interested are working in the development sector, a lot of microfinance work going on there. So when I came, I was instantly plugged into this expat community, which is unusual for me because my community, my circle of friends in Delhi, in large part is Indian. Mm-hmm. And it's actually strange and feels a little uncomfortable for me to be in Hyderabad in India surrounded by expats. I have not grown accustomed to that yet.
So what's been good about being here? What do you like about being here? When your mom wants you to come home and move back, what do you tell her?
What I love about it is the history, the richness of the culture. When a great idea comes up, it seems easier to execute on these things. I have friends spread across the country, and I've been so blessed to be able to travel and to stay with local families in Manali and Goa and get to experience that culture, not just the traveler culture. I love the mountains. I love mountaineering. I love trekking. I love climbing, rock climbing, and I've been able to do all of that in India.
So personally, it's been enriching, and you, recreationally as well.
Yes.
What about the downsides? What do you miss?
I miss people who, and this would apply anywhere. I moved from the East Coast of the U.S., from Connecticut to California, and had the same challenge of missing people who have known me for my entire life. There is something special about family that I have grown up with. They know exactly who I am, what to expect from me, and I know what to expect from them. And that's hard because I have been here for 1 year, and so
it takes longer than that.
It does. Yeah. So that's hard. One of the greater challenges, though, that's specific to India is still the linguistic barrier. I learned a little Hindi, and I can't really complain about this much because it's within my power to change it, to learn the language and dive into that. However, it's hard when I'm hanging out with the people I consider mm-hmm. my best friends and they switch into Hindi and I then have only a general sense of what is being discussed or what is going on. And I would love to be engaging in these jokes and laughing with them, but I don't always understand what they're talking about.
That can be hard. I used to live in Poland for a year. And then at some point, you know, everybody switches off and just goes into their comfort zone.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't...
But it happens here too. You don't have to always speak Hindi to understand what's going on. If you hang out with Bengalis, I'm going to get beaten for this. But Bengalis switch into Bengali at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And Hindi won't help you.
Right. So I think a lot of people here probably experience that.
Yeah. Are you just here for the work? Do you think once you're done, you'll move back?
I am not here just for the work. I think for the community of people that I've met here, for the relationships I have, those have become important to me. Even though it has been just a year, I do have some very close friends that I value. I think that I am probably uniquely positioned here to make an impact in a way that in the U.S. I may not be able to.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising when I call up and want to have an appointment with a company, because they recognize that I've come from the West to do this with a social mission working on a startup, I think people are a little more open to meeting with me because in their minds this seems important because I've come halfway around the world to engage in this. So it helps, it does help open doors sometimes.
Well, good, at least somebody's doors are opening. That's a sad comment on where we are as a race, I guess.
You know, I said this. Someone was interested when I went back to the U.S. about what life was like for me there returning. And I said, well, you know, this is a sad comment. However, I don't receive the level of service in the U.S. that I receive in India. And it occurred to me as I was standing in Grand Central and I was purchasing orange juice and I was counting out my change. I had so much change I wanted to get rid of. And the woman behind the counter gave me the most frustrated look because I was taking my own sweet time. And I thought, you know, if I was in India at some chaiwalas or something, he would let me take as long as I want. And he'd be smiling and happy the whole time. So there's perhaps a level of impatience in the U.S. that does not exist here.
Interesting.
Even just the level at which people abide by rules. For example, driving down the streets in the U.S. I was talking to my cab driver here in Bombay, where I'm visiting right now, and he said, so in U.S., these red lights, what do people do? I said, oh, well, you stop at the red light. He said, oh, and do people sometimes speed up to get through? I said, oh, you mean like running a red light? He said, yes, running a red light. I said, well, sometimes people do this, but if they are caught, they will have a big fine to pay, and police are very serious about this. He said, oh, I said, yes, very strict in U.S., which gets annoying because, you know, if I'm at a light in the middle of the night and there is no one around, why do I need to be waiting at a red light just because the light happens to be red?
Oh, you are going to be such an example for people.
But there's no one around to see me in the middle of the night. No, I still do not run red lights, but there's a certain carefreeness, shall we say, in India when it comes to these rules. Well, or wearing one's seatbelt, for example.
Are there specific things that you miss?
I miss having a corner deli / smoothie shop / salad bar that I can walk into and know that I can get fresh spinach with fresh broccoli and hummus and a wonderful soy strawberry smoothie. These are the things I miss. It's the food. Another thing that I miss is mobility. In the U.S., if I need to go to the store, I know exactly how to drive there, what I need to purchase when I get there. So even though there are so many options, having grown up there, it's not as overwhelming for me as it may be for somebody coming from outside the American culture.
So you miss just knowing your place and like what to get and where, or being the freedom to actually go do it?
Both.
Do you drive here?
I do not drive in India. I've contemplated doing so. I think once I am settled in one city for mm-hmm. a foreseeable amount of time, I may drive.
Mm-hmm.
I've become more comfortable with the idea. I was very uncomfortable driving around with friends and just thinking about driving myself, I thought, I cannot anticipate what someone is going to do. And this is something, you know, when one grows up in a place, they know what the other driver is going to do.
I don't think anybody here knows what anybody else is going to do on the roads.
Really?
The crazy people.
Well, that is what it seems like to me. But somehow, accidents get avoided. And I've been in more accidents in the U.S. than I have here.
Huh.
Despite all of the traffic rules and people actually abiding by them in the States. Still, though, the idea of knowing, understanding the systems that are in place, understanding, for example, if I need to go to the bank and make a deposit, I know exactly what to do, versus here I got sent up to the first floor to a travel agent who wasn't a part of the bank and then sent back down to the ground floor to make my deposit to the counter that originally sent me to the travel agent. So literally going in circles, and that comfort probably comes with time, understanding what exactly I need to do and in what order. It's just easier to get these things done in the U.S. for me.
For most people. I'm still waiting for my bank account to open because they're nincompoops in the bank. I'm right. What else has been challenging?
Although I appreciate the casualness of friendships, for example, when there is no sense of time or immediacy or expediency. And for example, a bank account will take as long as the bank feels like to open it. These things really frustrate me, especially being a business owner in an industry that is somewhat time dependent. I know the longer it takes for us to roll this out, the more people are going to be dying, the harder it is to sustain ourselves as a business without financing, for example. And so when it comes to these things, it's frustrating. I wish that I could go to the doctor, see a doctor immediately, get my results the next day and have that taken care of. However, sometimes this drags on for a week or more, mm-hmm. going back and forth, sending somebody for the results. These things frustrate me.
Mm-hmm. How often do you go back?
I came over a year ago, and I have visited home once.
Oh, that's it?
Mm-hmm.
And when do you go next?
I go back for Christmas.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I did not go back for Christmas last year, and I spent the day, well, I spent Christmas Eve on my friend's living room floor. I had Giardia, I think, some kind of dysentery, probably Giardia, and I was so ill, my phone was not working, my family had to call me on my friend's mobile, and it was a miserable experience, and I thought, I don't want to relive that, my family does not want to relive that, so I'm going home for Christmas.
Sounds like a good plan. Mm-hmm. So what would you tell other people who are considering moving to India, people who may or may not have ever been here before?
I am always surprised when I meet people who come to India and have never been here before. And I met...
But the first time you came here, you'd never been here before.
Yes, but I was in Nepal for 4.5 months and I visited India for 3 weeks.
Okay.
So that was... I am talking about people who have moved here to begin full-time jobs. And, for example, my roommate is one of those. He has never been here, and he began a job with SKS, which is the Microfinance Institute, in their business development group in Hyderabad. And he's loving it here. I would say the one thing that is much easier said than done is flexibility coupled with patience, because that's what this country requires of anyone who lives here, whether it's someone who's grown up here or somebody who's moving here from the U.S. I think for somebody from the States, it's particularly important because people are so time conscious in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You say dinner is at 8:30 and people are there at 8:30, not 9:30 or 10 o'clock or whenever traffic allows them to or whenever they feel like leaving their house. Which I have even become a part of. I mean, now...
No.
Absolutely. My friend said dinner at 8:30 the other day. I left my house at 8:30, and it took me an hour to get there. Now, the thing is that I knew that I would arrive. They were still ordering drinks. They had not ordered dinner. Half of the people were not even there yet. So there really was no reason for me to be there at 8:30. And once people come and get a sense of what that's like, and this is how people operate in India, mm-hmm. it becomes a lot easier, I think. Mm-hmm.
Just let go and not expect people.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm getting there too, which is not good. I've started leaving home at the time I'm supposed to reach.
And there are exceptions. For example, when I go to business appointments, I'm always on time. Good. Because even if the people that I'm meeting are not on time, and for the most part they are not, it sets a precedent for me to be on time. And that's important just personally and professionally for me to uphold that.
I'm glad to hear it. Okay. So what is the most fun thing that you've done here?
My birthday last year comes to mind as one of the most fun celebrations that I've experienced. I had a party on this terrace where I was living, and my friends...
In Delhi.
My friends brought floral garlands for me. They decorated my apartment. They had chocolate cake that they served me, and they gave me chocolate tikka, and they did. I have a couple friends who do something called poi, which is a kind of fire dance.
Yeah.
And so we went up to the roof of my building and they did a poi performance.
How cool. And
yes, these are people that open concerts doing poi, so they're professionals, and it was amazing. And then the next day, we went to a place called Neemrana Fort Palace, which is between Delhi and Jaipur in the state of Rajasthan. It's out in the desert, and it's an old fort palace from the 13th century that's been converted so that each of the rooms has a different theme and a different name, and there was traditional music playing at dinner, and we saw a thunder and lightning storm roll in across the plains of Rajasthan, and it was so romantic and beautiful and just a wonderful, wonderful memory that could only be done here, could only be made here in India.
Well, very cool. Well, I hope you continue to have great memories in the making.
Thanks.
And thanks for your time.
Absolutely.
Good luck with Pharmacy Cure.
Thank you. And all the best with your endeavors, too.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Sonologue's podcast, NRI, New and Returned Indians, where everyone's a Desi. Keep us bookmarked for future episodes. And if you have questions you want addressed by someone who's just moved here, drop us a mail at info@sonologue.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, at sonologue, S-O-N-O-L-O-G-U-E.com.